Hello and welcome to the Kinetic Fitness Show, where we inspire you to live a longer, healthier, happy, and more joyful life. We cover everything you need to know to be optimally healthy in your mind, body, and spirit. Are you ready to become the ultimate version of yourself? Well, let's dive into another episode with your host and guide by your side, Allie West.
Welcome everyone to episode number 75 of the Kinetic Fitness Show. I thank you for joining me. I'm super grateful to have you listening in as always. I have another great guest lined up for you today, but before I introduce him, before we start today's episode properly, and I share this really inspirational episode with you, there's a few things that I would love for you to do for me. I mention these pretty much every week, but they are super important. So the first one is to subscribe to this podcast. That just takes one click and then you will be notified of any new episodes that I release. Secondly, if you can leave me a review, particularly if you are on Apple Podcasts listening to this, then do leave me a review. Reviews help me and all podcasters out to grow and to reach more people. Third and final one is to share this podcast. And this is the most important one for me. Just tell people about this podcast and then together we can inspire more people to live longer, healthier, happier, and more joyful lives. The best way that you can share this podcast is simply to grab a screenshot on your phone of this episode and then post it to your social media. Tag me in it, Allie West Coach, A-L-I-W-E-S-T, coach, spelled like coach, C-O-A-C-H, Allie West Coach. Yes, I have changed my Instagram handle and Twitter handle and Facebook handle. So it's Allie West Coach now. So if you've listened to this podcast before, you might have heard me say Allie West Fitness, but it's changed to Allie West Coach. So make sure that you tag me in Allie West Coach. Sorry, rambling there. But Allie West Coach on Instagram or social media, tag me in and I will share it with my friends, family, followers, loved ones as well. That's it. That's the little mini announcements that I like to do. Let's get stuck into today's episode. Let's dive in. And my guest today is Dan Tindall. And Dan and I met at the back end of 2019 on our Wim Hof Fundamentals course that my wife and I hosted at our gym, Kinetic Fitness in Nottingham. It was the second Wim Hof course that we'd put on with our good friend Lee Ewan. Lee, who has been on the podcast as well, if you want to listen to the episode that myself and Lee did all about breathing, episode 39. Go back and check that one out after you've listened to this episode. So myself and my wife hosted our second Wim Hof course in November with Lee, and Dan came on the course, and I'd never met Dan before, and we just hit it off. Like, we got on really well. We're into a lot of the same things. We like the same areas of health, well-being, of life in general. And we kept in contact after the course via Instagram and WhatsApp. And we had a little coffee a few months ago, beginning of 2020, and a nice 90 minute or so, 2 hours, we was chatting, just hitting it off and talking about all different aspects of life. And I thought to myself after, I thought, do you know what? Dan would be a great person to get on the show. So I asked him on and he agreed to come on, and we recorded this episode just before all the coronavirus craziness kicked off. It was literally like the week before our gym got closed down by the government. So I was pleased to get him on. I was pleased to do this podcast in person, because if you've listened to my podcast before, you know a lot of them are done via Zoom. A lot of them are done remotely. And I always love doing the Zoom calls. I love speaking to people all over the world, but I also love getting face to face and interacting and connecting with people together in that human environment. There's nothing wrong with being connected through social media or through technology. I'm absolutely all for that, but you can't beat human connection. And we're all missing and we're all lacking a lot of that at the moment. So I was grateful and blessed to get this podcast recording in person just before we got locked down. And I'm pleased and happy and proud to be sharing it with you today on this episode. So I hope you're going to enjoy this one. A little bit about Dan. Dan is a MMA athlete. He competes in mixed martial arts. And Dan is also in the process of launching his own blog and his own course centered around human development and helping people to become the best versions of themselves, very much what this podcast is all about. Dan is also heavily into the spiritual element of life. So he's into his meditation, self-development, spiritual practices. Again, a lot of the things that this podcast promotes and that I'm into as well. So we've got a lot in common, and we really talked about many different aspects on this podcast, including meditation, daily practices, daily routines. We speak about Dan's trip to Thailand that he did over Christmas and New Year, and the retreats that he went on and what he learned from that. We also talk about how we can all help ourselves spiritually, physically, and mentally, plus many, many other areas. So I know that you are going to love this episode. There's so much value, so much content, so much areas of health, well-being, and mindset and spirituality covered on this episode. So let's dive into it. Let's dig in, introduce Dan. He's going to tell you a bit more about himself, and we're going to share this podcast that we recorded together just a few months ago. Enjoy this episode. And if you need any help, you need more support, do not hesitate to reach out to me. Send me a direct message, send me an email, send me a voice note, and I will help you however I can. I'm here to help you. So this is episode number 75 with Dan Tindall. Enjoy. Here with my good friend Dan Tindall. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Thanks for coming in. We're in our little naughty cupboard, I call it, here at Kinetic. It's just like a makeshift staff room, but it's working for us.
Yeah, we need to get like a painting up of some nature or something.
Yeah, or a positive quote or something.
Yeah, that's it.
It's a bit too many white walls. And we've got our coffee, so we're going to be I've got decaf.
I've got caffeine.
You've got the caffeine, so yes. You're going to be wired, and I've already had too many today, so that's why I've gone for the decaf. Anyway, we're going to have a little chat, see what comes up, go with the flow, no pressure, and see what happens on this episode. But before we get going, let's just introduce you, tell the audience, tell the listeners about you, who you are, what you do, and we'll go from there.
Who am I? That's a good question. I'm a martial artist, so I compete in mixed martial arts in the cage, just an amateur. At the moment, that's sort of my main focus, sort of athletic performance wise. I used to be a personal trainer. I still do some personal training, but I'm self-employed. I do some property development. I do little bits and pieces, but sort of my main focus is around health and fitness now, and getting towards sort of finding a purpose. And my purpose has swung me back round to helping people. And I like to. Yeah, spend my time trying not to get punched in the face.
It's always good. It's always good. So how many fights have you had so far?
I've had seven.
Seven.
But it's been spread out over. I've been doing it quite a while, about 10 years.
Yeah.
So consistency hasn't been a strong point of mine. But I've gone from sort of taekwondo to mixed martial arts to freestyle wrestling, then back to mixed martial arts more recently. So four of those fights were last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
And what's the record?
Oh, the record's 4-3.
It's not bad.
So it's not too
four
bad.
Wins.
Four wins.
Yeah.
Three losses. Yeah.
Good. Decent. Yeah. So what has mixed martial arts taught you? Like, what do you enjoy by it? Why is that your focus? And why have you like gone down that path of getting into that and making that something that you enjoy doing and practicing?
Yeah. So for me, it's you know, I love martial arts. Martial arts has always been a passion since my granddad brought me up on watching all the old Bruce Lee and Jackie Chan movies. But what mixed martial arts drew me in because of the challenge. It's for me, it's completely the mental challenge. It's not been about being big and tough or trying to prove I'm hard or any of this stuff. For me, it really is the mental challenge of performing on the night. Yeah, when I'm faced with an opponent who's going to try and do everything he can to put me away, you know, can I do what it takes to overcome that? So that's for me the big draw.
Yeah, and I know when we spoke last, few weeks ago you said about the discipline of it, and also more the art of it, so to speak, as much the training. So can you touch on that a little bit as well?
Yeah, so
because what I mean by that is, sorry mate, but what I mean is like a lot of people think that MMA, cage fighting, boxing to some extent is just like two guys or two girls going in a ring and just kicking the shit out of each other, or seven shades of shit out of each other, and and that's all it is, and it's whoever's the hardest. I know we know that there's technique involved, but a lot of it is like it's that preconceived idea that it's two people beating the crap out of each other, especially with MMA and especially cage fighting. But I know that you look at it from a different angle, and you're very much about the art and maybe more the quote unquote spiritual side of it. So can you touch on that a little bit? What you like about that area of it?
Yeah, it has got a bad rep from the media because it's nicknamed cage fighting, and there's a lot of blood and everything. But behind all of that is a whole lot of, martial arts, true martial arts is about about the physical side, but about the spiritual side, about discipline, about respect. We fight alone in the cage, but to get us to the cage, get us ready to compete, it's a whole team effort. And that means turning up to training on time, putting in the hours, even if you're not fighting, but your teammate's fighting, then you go and put in the hours to help them develop for their fight. And there's a whole lot of technique to it. It doesn't always look that way. But even to get to the stage of getting in the cage, you've got so many disciplines you have to learn. You can be really good at striking, but if you're against a wrestler or someone who's good on the ground, you're going to get taken down and submitted very quickly, or just beaten up, and vice versa. If you're a good grappler, well, you've got to get them down first, which means not getting caught on the way in. So I really like the discipline. I love learning. There's so much to learn. I've been doing it like 10 years and my mind's still blown when I go to maybe a grappling jiu-jitsu comp that I've got into in the last couple of years. But to see the different levels and the capabilities of people is mad. But what I love about it is that you can go in and you have a good fight. You have a tough fight. Yeah, you're trying to hurt each other. My two fights ago, I came out with 3 cuts. My face was swollen. Like afterwards, you have a chat with a guy, hug. Like, it's respectful, and that's the difference. It's a true art form and a true self-discipline to be able to go in, have this physical test, this mental test, and to come out and be respectful. And I think for me, that's what I would always class myself as, a martial artist first and foremost. I'm not a fighter. There's a lot of people out there who put across the big talk, the big bravado. And sadly for me, like people like Conor McGregor, they've made a lot of money out of it. It's been brilliant, great, and it's raised the profile of the sport. I get that. But it sets a bad example. That's not respectful, the way they conduct themselves. And for me personally, it's not how I like to conduct myself, and I don't think it's how we should be teaching the younger generation to conduct themselves, by all insulting each other and all of this disrespect. That's not what martial arts is about. That's not why I got into it.
Yeah, that's more of a boxing thing, isn't it, where they're in each other's faces and pushing each other.
But sadly, it sells tickets.
Yeah, that's what I was
going to
say.
Yeah, it makes it exciting. So I get it. I get it.
It's about finding that balance, isn't it?
I was really impressed with how Tyson Fury has told his story about dealing with mental health and everything. And I think that's come really, because he again is this cocky, charismatic boxer and stuff, but then he's actually come about all of his mental health problems, which is a brilliant message. He's using his platform to send a really strong message for young men to aspire to.
So in terms of the sport, mate, in terms of MMA and what you do, what do you think are some of the biggest things that it's taught you and it's shown you, not just physically but on the mental side as well, because you've mentioned mental health there and that mindset side of things? What are some of the big things that it's helped you with, like on a personal level?
So on a personal level, it's taught me to turn up when I don't want to, for a start. Consistency. And it doesn't matter if how you how you're feeling, you're going to feel better coming out of that session. And for me, I've gone through a couple of years of being in a really bad headspace. I got in a bad position with work that basically allowed myself to get in a really negative cycle. But I promised myself at the beginning of last year that I'm going to compete regularly. Regardless, there's going to be no excuses, and that's what MMA gave me last year, was the ability to get through that and give me something positive to focus on. Because regardless of, you know, work situations, all these you know, other things that I couldn't control, I was put in a position where I couldn't control. Well, what I can control is what I do with my body, whether or not I turn up to the gym, and then when I get in a fight or in a grappling match, I'm in control then. Mm. They're not in control. That's me. This is, it's like, it's forced mindfulness.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even, you know, it's one of the most mindful things for me personally that I've felt truly in the moment. When I step inside the cage, it's really weird. Apart from like a big part of me going, what the hell are you doing? Yeah. It feels very surreal for me still, like that walk out to the cage. Am I really going to go in front of a cage in front of all these people? You know, I might get my ass kicked and be on YouTube forever. But when you're there and you stood across the cage, like, that's it, you're focused.
You're in the zone.
You can't think about anything else because you're going to get hurt.
Mm.
So that's given me a really good focus, a really, really positive focus for when my head was in a really bad headspace. It gave me that really positive thing to do. Through some of my fights, you know, what I have learned is never give up. And that's obviously not just in fighting, that's a life lesson there. I had one, the fight where I got cut up, I was against some big Polish guy who was just tough and way more aggressive than I am. And he battered me in the first round. And to be honest, I kind of quit on myself.
Mm.
The ref luckily didn't stop it. Because, I covered enough for him not to stop it. But in the in-between rounds, my corner team spoke to me. And were like, come on. You don't take. And I thought, do you know what? Well, I'm not going to quit. So I need to keep fighting. And then I came out in the second round and I submitted him in about, like, halfway through. He made a mistake, I capitalized on it.
Yeah.
And for me, after that fight, sort of reflecting on it, it was just don't give up, ever. There's always a way out.
Of course.
And that's for life as well. It doesn't matter how bad things get, there's always a way out.
Definitely.
And that's why it's so important having a toolbox that, you know, we've spoken about before, like all these different things that you can draw on to help you out of these bad times. So yeah. That, you know, that's been a massive lesson for me over the last couple of years with my mixed martial arts and for life, really.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk then about some of the things that you've put in place over the last couple of years, because you said obviously you've had a big shift in terms of maybe shifting away from certain careers, and I know that you come away from a relationship and all that, and I can vouch for all of that. I've been there and done all of that as well.
Yeah.
So what like daily practices, what habits, what things have you put in place in the last few years that have helped to raise you up and change your mindset and change your overall outlook on life? What are those things that you've done?
So I'd say for sort of daily habits, and it's taken me a while to do this, was meditation.
Yeah.
You know, it's taken me up till since I got back from a trip at the beginning of the year, really, to get a really consistent meditation practice going.
Why?
Just forming a new habit.
Mm.
And meditation's hard, and people give up on it straight away. They're like, I tried it, it didn't work for me. So
this is what I tell people. It's a meditation practice.
It is.
It's not meditation doing or whatever. It's a practice, and you have to keep doing it.
Mm. And I think people have that misconception of, like, everyone else who meditates can just meditate and not think about things, but it's not. Have you heard of Jack Kornfield?
Yeah.
He's brilliant. He's got
quite a few of his books.
Yeah. I haven't made it to his books yet, but I listened to his audio book and podcast, but you know, he's been a big sort of teacher of mine, I guess, over the last year. And you know, he's talking about it, about your mind wandering all the time, and that's what happens. He talks about, you know, how often you sit in there trying not to think of anything, and you'd start wondering what you're having for dinner.
Yeah.
Like, yes, I can relate to that. It's true. And I think it's good for people to know that, you know, everyone else who has a meditation practice, they're not just thinking of nothing. It takes years to be able to get to there.
Yeah, I mean, that for me is like, that's the ultimate level, isn't it? That's the ultimate level of ascension, is when you can just not have anything in your brain. And I think unless you're one of those Buddhist monks, Hindu monks, whatever, they're the people that have the ability to do that. But most people like you and I and everyone listening to this podcast, we can't switch our brain off, because we're not those kind of cats. We're not wired up like that. We've got to keep working on it.
And the other thing is, we all go to work. You know, these monks, they don't go to work, so they're not thinking about bills to pay, and they're not thinking about what they, you know,
and they're meditating
their kids
8-9 hours a day, aren't
exactly.
they? It's like athletes, like people are like, oh, I'm not that fit, I'm not as strong as these people, these athletes. Well, of course you're not. They train 8 hours a day. It's the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So meditation's, been really important. Journaling. Start journaling. Write down what I'm grateful for.
Every day?
Every day.
Yeah.
Most days. Sometimes I have blips, but I don't beat myself up about it. But generally, I wake up, I write down what I'm grateful for. My kind of morning routine is I get up early enough to have a cup of tea and read maybe 20 minutes of a book.
Yeah.
And then I'll write my gratitudes down. So I aim for a sort of 5 things that I'm grateful for. And they can be the same things every day. You know, I'm grateful for my health every day.
Yeah.
So that doesn't need to change. It doesn't have to be new things. Meditate for 20 minutes. And some positive affirmations. I think they're really powerful.
Of course. They're the big ones.
They really are.
Affirmations is just, I mean, we've spoken about it before on this podcast, and I think I might have even done a whole podcast about affirmations, but life changer. You can, your words, I don't think people realize how powerful your words are. Your words can change everything. Change your whole biochemical makeup, everything.
Yeah. Well, because you think in words. And people, I think these things are small. They seem small and insignificant. You think, no, that couldn't possibly help, like, change my life. That's not big enough. That's not costing me enough money. Because, you know, we got in this culture where you need to, everything needs to be big and brash and all or nothing. Or you have to buy a product. You know, this is going to change your life. No, these little things daily just help step by step build momentum to change your mindset to something really positive. So there, I think that's sort of my morning routine. And
you're mad into your running, right?
Yeah, I've gotten into my running, oddly. I don't know why. I think I've been...
That's the same as what you said earlier though about forced mindfulness in terms of the martial arts, but the running's the same thing. And this is the thing as well to point out to people listening in about meditation and mindfulness and all that kind of stuff, is that it doesn't have to be sat on a rock, like, with your legs crossed, like, looking up to the sky with your eyes closed and chanting. That's not necessarily what mindfulness and meditation... That is an element of it, but it's not what it's all about. Mindfulness and meditation for you could be going out in nature or running or MMA or boxing or skipping or whatever.
It's just doing something that's stopping you from thinking about the past or thinking about the future. It's just being present. You can do it while doing the washing up.
Yeah.
You know, and actually doing things like that, and going into it as using it as a mindful practice, or just 2-3 minutes of washing up, just try and focus on that washing up, whatever you're doing, but it's just being there, and that's it.
Yeah.
And it'll just give you some peace,
100%
some
in the moment.
Yeah
definitely. What about then, because we met, this is just to give everyone a bit of context, we met through doing the Wim Hof workshop, the Wim Hof fundamentals. You came to the gym here and you did the breathe in, jumped in the ice bath, all that kind of stuff. what about that? Do you still practice the breath work and the cold therapy or not?
Yeah, I do. I don't do this. I haven't been doing the cold showers as regularly as I would have liked. Just before, I think the lead up to Christmas, I was doing a lot of sauna and ice showers.
Yeah.
And I still do them a couple of times a week, but again, consistency is something I'm going to develop more. But the breath work, definitely, I've kept on top of that. And the, I said about the nasal breathing, so all my runs now, I just breathe through my nose.
And how's that affected things?
Yeah, good.
Notice the difference?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. It feels good. It feels natural now. To be honest, the first time I did it for a 10K, I think I did the first 5K and then K on the way back, I thought I was suffocating. Like, I don't know why. I don't have one of my nose, because I took a knee to the nose a few months earlier, so I'm not sure if that had blocked up.
And, yeah.
You know, mentally started to panic. Then I was like, no, that's cool. But, you know, I'm doing it now. I did a 30K run a few weeks ago.
Wow.
And
all
through the nose. So, yeah, it's good.
Nice.
And I love all that oxygen advantage stuff. I'm going to read that book. I haven't read that yet.
Yeah, but great book.
Podcast the other day. I can't remember which one.
He's getting about at the moment, Patrick McKeown. He seems to be doing the rounds on the podcast, so I might have to reach out to him and see if he wants to jump on this one. But yeah, I mean, the breathing is so powerful. Obviously, we've got the whole podcast with Lee that we both know who taught the course. That's, people can go back and listen to that if you want to learn more about the breath work. We've got one on cold therapy, which was one of the very first ones I did. So all of this stuff, all of these practices, they're just going to help your life in more ways than you can imagine. And as you said, they seem like little things, but the little things add up.
It's
the compound, interest, compound effect.
Yeah. And you know, what could be better? You're investing in yourself and your health, and that is number one priority.
Of course.
You know, they say on the airplane, you've got to fit your own oxygen mask first you help other people. And that's the same, whether you have family or not. You're not in a fit position to help other people if you're not in the good headspace or physical, you know, health-wise, in a good place.
This is what I tell my clients every single day. I mean, how can you expect to perform well in your job, with your family, in a relationship, whatever it is you're doing?
Mm.
How can you do that if you're not looking after the number one, if you're not looking after the foundation?
Yeah.
And people might listen to that and think, oh, well, that's a bit selfish, that's a bit arrogant. But it's not, because your health is priority. Everything else becomes easier, becomes more effective, more efficient when you're operating healthily.
Yeah, you have more time because you'll sleep better, and when you're awake, you have more vitality and energy to do stuff.
Exactly. And with everything we've got going on at the moment, we won't go there yet, but we've got all this global crisis in terms of coronavirus. It's even more important to look after yourself.
Absolutely.
And look after your well-being, immunity, all of that kind of stuff, for sure.
Mm.
You've done a few retreats then. I'm keen to pick your brain about this and share this with the listeners. So talk to the listeners about the retreats that you've done. And I know you've just been to Thailand. How long was you in Thailand for? 8 weeks? No longer?
Just in a 7 weeks.
7 weeks, okay. Yeah. So you did one while you was out there. But talk us through some of the retreats you've done and how they've kind of impacted your life and what you got out of those and some of the big takeaways.
Cool. Yeah. So I went on my first retreat last September at an amazing place called the Sharpham Trust down in Devon, Totnes in Devon. And I went there because, you know, I was in a bad place. I was looking for some space just to try and sit and think and contemplate things and reset myself. So I went down. It was a Buddhist retreat, a monk led, so we had a monk living with us for, I think it was 6 nights. And it was amazing. It wasn't quite what I expected.
What kind of retreat was it? Silent retreat?
So it was very much
like a holistic kind of.
Yeah. So it was just, I think it was designed to create sort of a community feel. So sort of typical daily routine would get up at 5:15, maybe do some qigong in the morning over this incredible view. It was amazing. And then 40 minutes meditation, and then we'd all have our individual jobs around the place. So I got cutting wood around, so we'd do that for 30 minutes and have breakfast, and we're silent up until 9 a.m. So it was 9 p.m. till 9 a.m. silent. And then we'd do a morning circle sharing where we'd all sort of, you know, over the week, I'd say why we were there, say what we're feeling, stuff like that. And it was really intense, to be fair. I think I wasn't quite prepared for it. It was like group therapy. I think the title of the retreat was called Make Less the Suffering. So I think it attracted people going through a lot of stuff or had been through a lot of stuff. So it was quite emotional. There was, you know, a lot of energy going around, that's for sure. And then we'd have a little talk. And then I think we'd go out, do some garden nurturing. So they'd like grow their own vegetables and stuff. So it was just weeding or whatever, mindfulness. Gardening is a great mindfulness practice, and being outside in nature.
Double whammy.
Yeah, exactly. Then had lunch, meditation again. So we'd meditate 40 minutes three times a day. We had our own time in the afternoon. And then we'd be a conversation in the evening. And then there was a silent day on the Wednesday. So that was brilliant. That was, for me, that was my first taste of a retreat. And
what were your big takeaways then from that one? And then we'll talk about the one you did in Thailand, because I know that was very different.
Yeah, that was very different. I think the sense of community is something that actually highlighted that I missed. And that openness. I'm quite an open person. I think from a lot of the stuff I put out on social media, I'm quite open about talking about mental health and my personal things I've come through and about my experiences and everything. And what the retreat highlighted was that a lack of other people that are on the same wavelength. You know, one of the reasons why I said to you, you know, keep in touch and stuff, because I've realized missing in my day-to-day life is like-minded people, people on the same vibe. So that was a big takeaway. And I think probably one of the most important things I took away was I need to go, you know, find my community or create a community. The other things were just, I guess, a gratitude for everything we have, and that we don't need a whole lot of things and stuff, and all this stuff we're sold on of nice cars, big houses, you know, all this stuff. It's all BS, really. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. I met guys living out of vans, and they're just happy people.
Yeah.
And when it comes down to it, like, I came away, my dad, I rang my dad just afterwards because I turned my phone off for a week, and he was like, Dan, you sound stoned. I was like, no, I'm not.
Just chilled.
Just so chilled. I think having a deep meditation practice, it gets that. And I think that's what it was.
Well, you're operating, when you're doing that level of meditation, your brain's operating on a whole other level. Because you're going through all those different brain waves as well. You're getting yourself into those different states.
That's it.
So you're going to talk and feel and probably look different as well.
Yeah, it's mad. That's why, honestly, meditation, wow. But that's, I think, one of the few ways you can really get into meditation is retreats are very powerful for that, because it's easier, because you're not thinking, oh, I need to go and do this job, I need to go and do that job. No, you're forced there. You're like, right, you got to sit there for 40 minutes. Okay, well, can't be anywhere else. I can't do any work. I haven't got my phone on me. So yeah, might as well. But that retreat was really powerful for me, and that also showed me that what I was trying to achieve with the property stuff and like these financial goals and this financial pressure I was putting myself
chasing
under,
the wrong thing.
Chasing the wrong thing completely. Yeah. Like, I always wanted to help people. That's what I wanted to do, because I was a really fat kid that lost a lot of weight and changed my life myself, and I wanted to help people do that. I made loads of mistakes along the way, and I'm still learning. And that's what I really wanted to do. I got a bit turned off by the fitness industry when I was a personal trainer. Some elements I didn't like about it, so I came away from that. But going on that retreat was like, nah, you know, there's other stuff you can be teaching people. Yeah. So that was a big takeaway for me, was sort of getting sort of shifted, like course shift. Back onto helping people.
Yeah, which is I think as well with the whole health and fitness thing, I think it is shifting and it is changing. I think people are more interested in lifestyle, and they're more aware of all the elements and facets that create health. Whereas before it was very much like, okay, I need to eat well and then I need to go and pump iron. I think it's evolved now and people are looking at the mental side of it, the mindset, the spiritual side that we're both into. The people are taking note of that, and I think we're going to see an even bigger shift definitely over the next few years, well, months and years towards that. I just want to put some of that stuff you said into context as well, so people get clarity and get balance as well. Balance, I'm not sure about that word either, but I say it sometimes, but it's a fine word, fine line word, I should say. So you said about you took away from it community, and obviously community is massive, and that's already been shown to help people with longevity, their health, happiness, joyfulness, all that kind of stuff. And then also at the same time, there's a lot in when you're doing retreats, you're on your own, aren't you, in your own headspace and your own time. So what I wanted to say is that I think, again, it's what I said, balance. It's about, can you work well in a community and build a community that's going to support you, lift you up, allow you to, again, a bit cheesy cliche, but vibe attracts your tribe kind of thing. But also, do you have the skills and do you have the ability to be able to be on your own as well? I think that's where people need to get themselves to. Do you know what I mean? Because I was always the social butterfly, you could say, like being around. And I was not always that great on my own, like in my own space. But now you could leave me anywhere on my own and I can do it and I'm capable of being in my own space. Whereas a lot of people struggle with that, don't they? And you're seeing it on social media at the moment with what's going on, the whole coronavirus thing. People have got to stay inside, self-isolation.
And they're going mad.
And they're going mad. They're like, I've got nothing to do, or I'm bored, or what do I do? What do I do? Whereas I think now, like for me, that's the joy. The joy is in sometimes being in your own space and being alone. And when you go back to what you said about chasing the material things, I think a lot of people need to be able to chase the internal happiness of being able to just sit and be at one with yourself.
Massively.
So you need both, don't you? You need the community and you need to be able to be on your own. And that's what I was trying to get to.
Absolutely. And both things are really important. And because everyone's different, you get extroverts, introverts. I'm an introvert. I'm really good on my own. But going out and socializing, not so good. But I'm getting better. And there's other people, as you say, you know, being on your own, you can learn a lot. And it's that.
It's going back to working on yourself, though, isn't it? On yourself first, doing the self-work, because there's introverts that are really happy, do you know what I mean, like really happy and joyful, but then there's introverts that are like depressed, anxiety, all that kind of stuff. But then on the flip side of things, you've got these like people that they put the bravado on, the social, and they're like great in social environment, but like deep inside they're insecure and all that kind of stuff, do you know what I mean? So it's, as I said, it's about,
but this comes down to emotional intelligence then,
and
self-awareness, which is something I've been learning about hugely, because I've been working with, he's a therapist per se, but someone for the last 4 years, which has helped develop my own emotional intelligence. But that's something that then sheds a light on these, you know, these things. I'm aware that socializing for me is a necessity, because it's proven, like, we're humans, we're designed to be connected. We're not designed to be isolated. So if I become a hermit, and you know, that's eventually, it's going to impact my mental health a lot and longevity.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's having that awareness to do it.
Exactly.
And being willing to do it.
Yeah, and when you become more self-aware and more emotionally intelligent, everything that is going on in the outside world, you can see it for what it truly is, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And things don't bother you as much.
Yeah,
but it's a big step to take that.
Of course, first accepting
responsibility, which is hard.
Yeah, because we're wired up to make excuses, and it was the guy that cut me off in traffic's fault, or it was my boss's fault, or it was my wife's fault, or whatever.
Yeah,
that's how we're. It's like the narrative that we go to straight away.
Yeah,
but I've been watching a lot of Jocko Willink recently. He's like, and his big thing is taking ownership, take extreme ownership, and it's something that I've been putting to practice like the last kind of 6 months or so, and feels good, but it's hard to admit that it is your fault or that you're responsible. It's difficult, but when you do it and you work on it and you say, hang on, I'm going to take ownership of this. Yes, I'm late. It's not the other, it's not the car's fault. It's not whoever's fault. It's my fault.
Yeah.
I should have left earlier or whatever. When you start to take ownership, it's like forgiveness to me and all that kind of stuff. It's so difficult and so hard, but the rewards you get from it are exponential, in my opinion.
Absolutely. All the growth there is, you know.
Yeah. From accepting growth responses. Hurts, doesn't it? Like, oh, growth it is hard so and much. It hurts.
And your ego takes a battering. The idea is not to get have an ego, but we all do.
Oh, yeah, of
and
course.
We're all constructed, you know. And it's trying to strip that back. But taking responsibility is the first step.
Yeah.
With our health, with our lifestyles. Everything is our own responsibility.
And going back to what you said way back at the start of this podcast, taking control, you're in control, not taking control. Well, it's the same thing. You're in control. Yeah. You have the choice and the ability to change everything in your life.
Absolutely.
With your thoughts, with your actions, with your words, with what you put in your mouth, everything.
Yeah.
So.
And at the end of the day, there's no excuses, really, because it is down to you. And that's why, you know, back to the fighting, you can make any excuse. So many people make excuses about training camp not being right. Like, I had this injury, that injury, whatever, this, and this. It doesn't matter. It was down to you.
Yeah.
Because you had every chance to control what the outcome of that fight, as you do with life. And we're all in different positions. But we're in control of this, our heads. And that's where it starts.
Mind is powerful.
It is, and that's why mindset's of the key to everything.
Yeah.
Look at there's so many examples of it.
Yeah.
So many examples.
It's about getting it all in sync as well, though, because I'm with you. I'm you know me. I'm 100% on the mindset stuff. I'd say 98-99% of the time I'm a positive dude.
Yeah.
The vast majority of the time. But I think as well, sometimes people get, when they get into this realm of focusing on mindset and correcting all that, they sometimes let it consume them. And I've probably been guilty of it, of like, oh, it's all mindset. And sometimes we forget about like the heart and the gut as well. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like they're all interconnected and all wired together.
Yeah.
So sometimes your mind can overtake, and you know, there's that whole monkey mind concept and all that. And sometimes you've just got to follow your heart, follow your gut, follow your intuition.
Sure.
And that's one of my affirmations is trust myself and follow my impulses. When I trust myself and follow my impulses, everyone wins. That's one of my affirmations I say every single day.
Yeah.
So sometimes, yes, the mindset is super powerful, super important. It's one of the best things, but don't neglect or forget the other areas as well that are leading you sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've gone way off topic, but we want to go on to the Thailand retreat now, because this was like the opposite, wasn't it, or different? But talk to me about Thailand retreat.
Yeah, I didn't know what I quite got myself in for.
Because this was a silent retreat.
It was a silent retreat. I don't know why I didn't really know that, but yeah, it was a silent retreat. So I think this was like meditation boot camp.
Yeah.
So it was at
just to put this into context for everyone listening, silent retreat is exactly what it says on the tin. It's no talking, no communication,
There's no communication. I think it's called noble silence. So you're not supposed to make eye contact or smile or anything at anyone. So you go to these retreats. I mean, I was really excited. It was like they're at the top of this beautiful mountain, and I was like, yeah, it's gonna be amazing. We got there, and yeah, it was silent for a start. And silent retreats aren't just silent. It means there's no reading, no writing, no listening to music. The writing one got me, because when I had silent day before on the other retreat, I did a lot of writing, which helps process thoughts and stuff. So I was a bit gutted at that. But yeah, so silent retreat. So we'd get up, there'd be a Dharma talk with the monk for an hour at like 5:30. And then breakfast, and then meditation.
Did the monk speak English, or was it translated?
Yeah, no, he spoke English.
Okay, got you.
Yeah, it was quite funny. It's good. Yeah, it was good. Had a lot of good sayings. But yeah, and then I think that we had lunch at 11. So the monks don't eat past lunchtime, so we had lunch at 11, and then it was basically, so it's like
in fasting,
18-hour fasts, which I was like, oh, I'm really grateful that I fast. So it was okay for me, but everyone else, they were allowed juices with calories in and stuff, so they were drinking loads of juices. But and then yeah, meditation, and we did an hour of chanting in, I think, Pali, some ancient Thai language.
Okay.
In the evenings for an hour, which is the only time we're allowed to speak, but trying to read this this language was quite fun. But yeah, the rest of the time it was meditation. So it was my first experience of walking meditation. So the monk would give us on the first day, it was like 15 minutes walking, followed by 15 minutes seated. And then the idea is you have a break, you get up, you walk about, and then you do it again. But these were like 6 hour block. Like the afternoon out, it was a 6 hour block.
Wow.
Meditation, which is really intense. At the other retreat, we had jobs to do. So there was lots of mindful practices and stuff, but it wasn't just solely meditation. But this place was. So it was really daunting, really daunting. So I think it started off at half hours of 15 and 15 and then built it up until I think I got up to 25 minutes walking, then 25 minutes seated. So I did 6 days, I think 6 nights, 5 days. But yeah, it was intense because there was no feeling of community there. Mm. And that was the idea, that you are alone and you are silent. And I'd got there. I just had some like about 4 or 5 days, really nice days in Thailand on my own, just exploring all these monasteries and stuff, just being very grateful and like, you know, on my own, I'm single, I can do what I want, and just wandering about, having coffee where I wanted to have coffee, and you know, like meeting
being
people,
in the moment,
just being in the moment. I spent New Year's Eve like sober at a temple where there were like 100 monks chanting. It was this gorgeous temple. That was amazing. That was a, you know, I just sat there meditating and then brought in the new year. So I had this really good times, and then went to this retreat, man, it was a shock. And it was just like, I think all these feelings had caught up with me, and I sat in my bed crying on the first night. I was just like, what are you doing? So in the first like two and a half days were really, really tough for me. I couldn't, like sitting for 15 minutes trying to meditate were really difficult. I kept, and this where all these like teachings came, started to come into play about you know, causing our own suffering by wanting things to be different from how they are. I was there, I was just wanting it, I wanted to go back and be exploring and meeting people and engaging and having these new experiences. I wanted to get out of the retreat, and I thought, oh, I need to do this, I need to do that. So that took me a couple of days to get over, to really sort of talk to myself and be like, as soon as your mind starts going, like they were like, just think, like, you're wanting, yeah, that's wanting. So identifying these thoughts. But come sort of day three, I started to get into it. I got really peaceful. I was really content. Yeah, and it got a lot easier. I was very grateful for my time there. And I mean, the accommodation was was not good.
Basic.
Yeah, it was not good.
What part of Thailand was it in?
It was in Chiang Mai.
Yeah, in the north, yeah.
In the north. But it was great. I learned loads. I learned a lot.
So what were the, again, going back like we did earlier, what were the big takeaways for you?
For me, it was that we cause our own suffering massively, and that it was just like kicked myself for the last 2 years I'd spent in my big pity party inside of my head, borderline depressed.
Mm.
Which caused a lot of, you know, lost a relationship over it. I lost 2 years being really in a bad mood. It was all my fault. It's my construction. Yes, there were things I'd got myself in a position I couldn't get out of, but there's so much other stuff I could have done to be positive, but instead I got in a negative downward spiral, which happens, you know, people go for it. I think most people during their lifetime are going to get into a point where they have some form of whether it's anxiety, depression, whatever.
Yeah, this links back again though to being self-aware and building that emotional intelligence, because the way I look at things like this now, and probably you're the same, is that stuff happened for a reason, to teach you the lessons. Yeah. It's all a lesson.
Absolutely.
It's how we learn from it.
Yeah.
And do we keep doing the same dumb shit and making the same mistakes, or yeah, do we take the lesson on board and make the relevant changes to grow?
Absolutely. It's no good someone else telling you this stuff either. It's all right, and sometimes it works, but I might have to tell you 100 times before it sinks in. Like, you've got to be in the right space to take in the lessons.
Mm.
It might be the 101st time that they tell you the same thing, that it clicks because something's aligned and that's the right timing. So for me, it was like suffering is wanting things to be different from how they were. That was a big lesson for me.
Yeah.
That was a big takeaway. I would say the other one was finding, it's going to get all hippie now, unconditional love for myself. I've spent a lot of years resenting the fact that, hey, I'm a nice, loving, kind guy, and I got beaten up a lot when I was a kid. So I had this, like, demons trying to be not embracing, you know, big reason why I fight in a cage, because I'm big and tough.
Mm.
Nah. It had a bit of a revelation, I guess. Just accepting that and just being like, do you know what? That's cool. That's who you are. Embrace it.
Yeah.
And not being so hard on myself all the time.
God, I know which about that. Sarah slaps me around the head sometimes because I'm so hard on myself. Yeah. But I also, this is what people need to realize as well, the people that are listening to this, and you may be just starting your spiritual journey, you may be on it, you may be full steam ahead with it, is to know that the deeper you go within yourself and the deeper you go on the spiritual journey, the more you are going to question yourself, yeah, weigh things up, all that kind of stuff. So you've got to be able to be humble and not let that consume you, because I'm the same. I'm like, well, I should be at this position and here and here, mm-hmm. and it's like, no, well, I'm exactly where I need to be.
Yes,
I love myself for where I am and who I am, and it's that again takes work. So it's, really I'm does. Glad you mentioned that, because it that's really something does. That a lot of people suffer with, and I know I've suffered with it.
Especially with social media and stuff now. I had to stop following other property developers,
because
I constantly be like, well, they're doing this, I should be doing that. That's what got me in a bad position in the first place. Yeah. Like, yeah, social media is just there. So, you know, that's like one big piece of advice that, you know, that I have done over the last year. Anyone who I found that I'm comparing myself to on social media in a negative way,
unfollow.
Yeah. Like, I find that people are sort of, it's okay, like, people way further ahead than you, I personally find that's kind of cool, because I find them that motivating.
Yeah.
But there's that in between people where I'm like, well, you should be doing this, you should be doing that. No, you don't need that. Just have a clear out, get it out, because you don't need this person, you know, this person being your inner self telling you off all the time.
Weed the feed.
That's it. It's important.
Defo. So, absolutely.
Yeah. I think that's it. Yeah.
They're the big ones.
They're the big one from that retreat, massively.
So what's next? Where do you see things going for yourself, and what do you want to focus on for 2020 and beyond? Because I know, obviously, when we spoke last year, talking about putting this brand together and helping more people with their health, well-being, mindset, all that kind of stuff. That's so talk about that a little bit, and talk about your kind of goals, aspirations for the next, whatever.
Yeah.
100 years.
Yeah. All being well. That's it. Longevity.
Beyond, I'm going for 150, 200, whatever.
yeah, with good health.
With good Still health, movement. Obviously, yeah. I don't want to be 150 and decrepit. But I was watching something the other day. It was a cooking program randomly, I think. And it was in India, in Assam, you know, where they make the tea, region.
Yeah.
And there was a woman there, she was like, oh yeah, my granddad like passed away not long ago. He was like 139, they reckoned he was. Wow. They didn't have any like bang on accurate records, but they was pretty sure he was like pushing 140 when he passed away. So it's doable. Do you know what I mean? Like, when you get everything balanced up, maybe the thing that might stop us with where we currently live is like the environment that we're in terms of pollution, radiation, etc. But I think if you do the right things and put the right processes in place, but also like what you said earlier, the mind, get this mind right, and there's no reason, because we're led to believe that we have to get to 70 and or 80 and pass away, or be 70, 80 in a wheelchair or bent over, and we have to, that's what we've been led to believe.
And then we tell ourselves the story.
Yeah, and then we tell the story.
Self-fulfilling prophecy. Exactly. Prophecy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You manifest it. So if you can say, oh, I'm going to live to whatever, and I'm going to be healthy and whatever, then to me, that's the first part.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Yeah, sorry. What's the plans?
Plans, yeah. So, I'm, yeah, putting this brand together, I've changed tack slightly. And so we're starting off, I'm going to do a blog. Because I feel like one of the biggest ways I can help people is by sharing my journey. So I'm putting together a blog.
And you said you like writing, so
I like writing, so I'm really excited by that. So that'll be out this month, I think, I'm gonna start. But things are almost there with that. So yeah, really looking forward to that, getting writing and just putting information out there. So I'll be getting guest blogs in as well and drawing on other people's expertise, alongside sort of my experiences and my thoughts and that. I think I wrote 27,000 words in Thailand. Sort of awesome. Book, ebook maybe. Not sure what I'm doing with it yet, but for me that was like an ethos for my brand.
Yeah.
To put down in paper, which really helped clarify a lot of things, which was interesting. So I need to get that. And eventually podcast, again, like what you're doing, I think is a great way just to reach out to people, to share some knowledge, share some inspiration. And you know, keep progressing this social change that we're looking at. And like you said earlier, I feel like we're getting there. So, you know, I think there's going to be a big shift.
Yeah, there's going to be a big shift with what's going on, definitely.
Well, yeah, for sure. I think, I don't know, like you look at it back in the sort of 60s with the whole hippie movement and stuff. And I feel like it's got a bit of an undertone of that, I think. I think people, the more people talk about these things, talk about love, talk about health, and openly talk about it. Podcasting is such a good platform, powerful platform, with social media and stuff. It makes it more accepting. I think there's going to be a big change soon, which will be exciting. But my big thing, which is going to happen over the sort of the next couple of years, is I plan to open my own retreat center.
Oh, nice.
Which is, I think I got so much from my retreats.
Yeah, for sure.
I think just being able to detach yourself and plunge deep dive into a retreat, even for a couple of days, you can learn so much, make some really big breakthroughs that you can then take away to the rest of your life. I think it's a really powerful thing. So that's something that I'm really passionate about. I'm really excited about.
So
they're sort of my goals, and it's just
awesome. Love it.
Keeping the momentum going, keeping that positivity going. And
yeah, I'm yet to do a retreat. I need to. I want to. The ones I really want to do is, the first one I want to do is a darkness retreat. I've been looking into that.
You said about
that.
Yeah,
so just in complete darkness.
That's mad.
Which is, again, it's the same. It's silence and darkness. So it's
darkness.
Double whammy. Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty hardcore. Been looking into that for a while. So that's one. And then I think I mentioned to you before as well, me and a couple of friends are looking at going to Peru next year to do the plant medicine ayahuasca retreat. But I definitely want to do some retreats, because as you say, there's no way out once you've full steamed ahead into it. Well, there is a way out. You can say I want to go home, but if you've paid your money and invested in it, then I'm one of them people. I'm kind of all or nothing. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it.
Well, the Sharpam Trust, I'd highly recommend. I think they do 6-day silent retreats there as well. They've got three. They've got like the big posh house. They've got the barn, which is sort of the more Buddhist community based one. But then they've got a bell tent retreat in the woodland. They do canoes and stuff like that. But they do loads of different. They're packed out. They're 52 at the barn. They do a retreat every week of the year.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah, this is what I was saying on a recent podcast I did with Troy Casey. He was saying that the center he went down to in Costa Rica to do his ayahuasca back 4 or 5 years ago, they were having like 8-9 people on a retreat. Now they've got like 500. It's like,
wow.
It's crazy. Not all in one go, but the kind of the volume footfall that's going through the place.
I think
people are definitely opening up and awakening, you could say.
And again, it's talking about it more. I want to do several types of retreats and sort of do some a bit more hippie, like just hippie mindfulness based ones, and a lot to do with mindset. So push people mindset, do some ice baths.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
We need to get ourselves out to Finland with Lee and go and jump in the Baltic Sea.
I know.
We'll get there. I was meant to go in February, but for one reason or another, it hasn't worked out this year. But hopefully next year we can get out there. The one thing I want to talk about just before we wrap things up is because I'm on this as well at the moment. On this, is that the right terminology? But you gave up alcohol, didn't you?
Mm. Yeah.
The booze. The drink. So over a year, right?
Yeah, yeah. February last year.
February 2019.
Yes. Yeah.
And how's that impacted your life? How's that changed things?
Massively.
Go on, go talk about that for a little bit, and then I'll share my experience, and then we'll look to wrap things up because I'm conscious of time as well.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I gave it up last February. I was, as I say, really bad headspace, and it started coming out when I was drinking. And for me, it was just this point where I lost my temper and I thought, this isn't you, Dan. I was always a happy, I have a few drinks, I was that happy, giggly kid. And I thought, no, this isn't for me anymore. Gave it up. And since then, man, it's been a journey. But I finally feel like I'm living in alignment. I've always said that booze is the worst thing about, especially the UK, our culture. I hate the binge drinking culture. Just go away on holiday and then you know, normally the rowdy people, drunk and disorderly, are the Brits, and I just think it's just really negative part of our society. Yeah, I've always drank. You know, I've always thought it was bad. I've always said it was bad, but I always drank. So I was out of alignment.
Mm.
Now I don't drink anymore. Now I'm in alignment and I feel good. I'm not every weekend, but it got to that point because my ex liked to drink, and we had some fun together, like going out as couples do. But I'm a bit of an all or nothing guy, you know. I got to the point where, you know, I think I'd done quite well not drinking that much. I had 10 pints. Then the hangover, the calories, I was heavier, I was stones heavier than I am now. And for me, like, it was like every weekend I was starting from starting with a hangover, basically. Get 2 day hangovers, feeling groggy. That's why, you know, Monday was always a struggle and stuff. And I was wasting so much time, so much money. My health wasn't very good. I fought at heavyweight. The first two people I fought last year were 6'7".
Wow.
They were giants.
All because of your weight.
Just because I was fat. Ultimately, because I drank beer.
Mm.
Cut out the beer. I think I fought at 108 kilos at the beginning of the year. Ended up fighting at 84 kilos.
Wow.
At the end of the year. Like, massive change. And for me, I just got so much more energy. I'm not starting from day one every week. I'm doing stuff on the weekends.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because you go back to what you said about the UK culture. I don't think it's just necessarily the UK. It's probably like a lot of countries. But in this country, the weekend is centered around drinking, isn't it?
Yeah.
A lot of the time it's Friday, wrapped up work. Where are we going? Straight to the boozer, glass of wine or a pint turns into 5 pints and so on. And then it's, okay, wake up for Saturday morning, got a bit of a hangover. What are we doing Saturday night? Oh, we're going out again.
Yeah.
And then Sunday feeling rough as anything, and then, like you say, it bowls over into Monday. A lot of people, I know I was as well, I was drinking on a Sunday as well.
Mm-hmm.
Getting here at 6 a.m. into the gym to open up the gym, to do classes, to train clients, to try and operate a business, feeling like shit. It's like, what am I doing? And everything you said I can vouch for as well. And then I think one big thing is the mental clarity you get when you...
Yes.
And I'm not saying to people, we're probably not saying to completely cut out, but cut down, reduce,
cut down.
And it just will make a massive difference. Mm-hmm. But I'm like you, I'm all or nothing. I said, like, I'm going to stop drinking. That's it. And I'm not as long as you, but I'm, 70 odd, nearly 80 days in.
And how are you feeling?
I'm loving it.
Yeah?
I'm loving it, yeah. And
do you feel like you're missing out?
Not really, no. Mm. And it's the bizarre thing is, in January, because I stopped, my last drink was New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
Or drinks.
Yeah, yeah.
I stopped in January, so 1st of January, that was it, cut the ties. And the funny thing is, there's probably only been about
three or four times where I thought, oh, do you know what? I could really have a drink now. Most of that was in January.
Yeah.
And also, we link drinking to like stress.
Yeah.
I'm stressed out. I've got to have a drink. Or I've had a difficult day at work. I've had a drink. And I still had some of that programming.
Yeah.
Because there was a time last month, so we're in March now as we record this. There was a time in February where I'd had a bit of a tough day, whatever, and I'd be like, oh, I could really go for a drink tonight, or I could really have a drink. And I just thought to myself, hang on a minute, what is this? This is just the old programming that what I've been drilled into myself from 14 years old, that a drink is the way to get out of stress. And there's other ways that you can deal with it. Do you know what I mean? There's meditation, we've already spoke about that. There's exercise, there's writing.
Just getting outside.
Getting outside,
go for a walk. Massive, just that fresh air. Just you get some clarity from that. I think that's why I started running, to be honest.
Yeah. And all those things you mentioned, you was reeling them off, and I was thinking, he's not said one like positive thing. Like you're saying that everything you're saying that drink was doing to you was all negative things. Do you know what I mean?
There's
you might go out and have a good time, but most of the time you're gonna feel like crap. And I've been out now, I've been out three or four times, like out what we call out like partying out.
Yeah.
And I've been fine, like, and because I believe I'm self-aware as well, then I become more aware of the surroundings because I'm not in an intoxicated state. So I see stuff going on. Or the best way I can describe it is like Neo in the Matrix. Do you know what I mean? Like you see it and like, shit, is that what I'm like when I was intoxicated, scary, when I'm drunk? Yeah. It is scary.
And you realize how vulnerable you sort of made yourself as well.
Yeah,
I've been out a few times. It's very loud.
Yeah.
Like, I've noticed a few things like with it, like definitely very loud and that. But I've had fun, and it's relearning how to socialize. Like I'm what 30 now, probably started drinking when I was 15, 16.
Yeah,
it's that daunting, and this is what you get. Like if you decide to give up booze, it will be daunting. Well, for me, it was daunting anyway because I was like, I don't even know how to socialize without booze. Especially like going into like meeting new people and stuff. That was quite scary for me. But guess what? You can do it. Because it's going out of your comfort zone. But
I always find as well, you'll find something to replace it or something better probably to replace it. So don't get me wrong. Like with me and Sarah, it was very much weekends. Like we'd be working through the week and the weekend would be centered around, as I said, going for a drink. So we might go for a bottle of wine or a glass of wine or whatever the case may be. And now I'm doing a lot more of the stuff that I've been putting off. So I picked up my guitar again, and I'm like, like, you're amazing. Getting good at the guitar now, aren't you? And I'm like, yeah, because I'm this time that I would have been drinking, I'm using it to do something that's quote unquote more productive. I've been doing more writing, more meditating, all those good kind of positive habits have come in because I've knocked the booze on the head. And Sarah's still drinking, she's still having it, but she's cut down. And as you said, one of the big things, again, not sound like your mum or your dad, but it's saving money. Like the amount of money you save, you realize how much you're like technically chucking down the drain by drinking. And I don't want to spend too long on this because I don't want to sound like we're preaching. But I'd say to people, just try it.
Just try it. Just try it. Everyone can do it. And I think you'll be surprised. And it is, I think the big thing is the social pressure to do it. And that's what makes it harder.
Yeah. But I think it's more acceptable now, though. Do you know what I mean?
Do you know what? Alcohol-free beer is so much nicer than it used to be.
It tastes good,
It tastes so good. So if you do think, I really fancy a beer, cool. There are loads of really good alcohol-free beers. Yeah. I love them.
Yeah, we went out with my friend. There was four of us. We went out last Friday, or two Fridays ago. We went for a curry, went to shoot some pool, and then went for a couple of drinks after. I drank alcohol-free beer the whole night. And do you know what I mean? Go back four or five years ago, the social pressure, it would have been like, oh, what are you doing that for? You're a pussy, you're a wimp, all these negative connotations. But now my mates were like, they were like, actually like, good on you. Like, we're like, I can't believe you're doing it. Like, well done. Like, keep it going. And it's like, wow, like, these are my same mates. You know what I mean? Because I think it's more socially acceptable to not drink.
That's really positive. Because I know I've had some friends who are sort of trying to give up and that, and they've had slight negative things, but you've got to remember with any of this stuff, the more you do to improve yourself, the more you do for your own health and stuff, it will highlight to other people, holds up a mirror.
Yeah.
about how they're living their life and stuff. So don't take anything personally.
Exactly.
Just understand
and be courageous as well. Have the courage to say, oh, I'm not drinking, that's my choice.
Yes.
And then not be arrogant, but just say, look, I'm feeling better. I've got my look at my skin, look at my health, look at my weight, blah, blah, blah. And then they'll be like, actually, like you say, holding the mirror up, and maybe I need to make some changes.
Yeah. And also be understanding of your friends that are acting not how, you know, they might not be supportive of you and stuff, but understand that, hey, they're just not ready for it yet.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was Eckhart Tolle said, you can't bring the, if you're conscious about things, you can't drag the unconscious into consciousness.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You just both become unconscious then. So it's, yeah. Everyone's at different stages of their journey, and that's the big thing. We're all on a journey.
Mm.
We're all at different stages. There's no right or wrong, really. We're all just trying
reduce
to
the judgment, which is difficult, but it's that's a hold of a podcast for this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
We'll come round to that.
Yeah.
But no, mate, that was wicked. I appreciate your... I'll shake your hand, mate. I appreciate your
You're
time.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
We could have kept on going. I know we could have, but we'll do something again.
We'll do something again. Once stuff launched and...
Yeah.
Let you know about that.
Yeah, cool. I should have pre-warned you about this, but where can the listeners go first to like find out more about you if they want to, like, if they've liked what you've said today and they want to check you out a bit more? Where's the best place to find some more information out about you?
So best place at the moment is Instagram. My handle is at I am Daniel Tindall. So just check me out on there, and then I'm basically gonna, once everything's launched and ready to go, I'm gonna put it on there.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm more active on Insta than anything else, really.
Cool. And I know you mentioned a couple of quotes already, and I'm going to put you on the spot here, but we always finish my podcast with a favorite quote. Have you got a quote to finish?
Yeah. Be the change.
Be the change.
Yeah.
Love it. Simple.
That's it.
Wicked, mate. Thanks a lot. I appreciate your time, and I wish you all the success, mate. Nice.
Cheers,
one. Thanks.
That's a wrap on another episode of the Kinetic Fitness Show. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share this podcast episode with your friends, family, and colleagues. Until next time, peace and love.